Welcome to the Home Team Podcast. I'm Steve Carter, and in association with my good friends, Sam Macho, Trey Burton, we are here, and this podcast exists to talk about the intersection between sports, faith, culture, and family. And today, guys, we got a lot to chop up. I mean, there's a lot that happened. I mean, we got the NFL just released its schedule. We could talk Tim Tebow and him being the new tight end for the Jacksonville Jaguars. We can talk literally about the Kentucky Derby and that poor horse getting a ton of drugs. We talk about Russell Westbrook's legacy. Trey Burton, I'm going to you. You got some hot takes. What do you want to talk about today?
Oh, wow. Well, if you're going to give me the microphone, I'd love to talk about Florida sports. But we can pass on that. I'll save you guys for another day.
It wouldn't take that long. It might take a minute or 30 seconds. You talk about,
I mean, you want to talk top 10 baseball, top two or three softball, you know, whatever. It's no big deal. It's
like the usual, about 15, 30 seconds.
The usual. What sports are being played right now? All right, you can guarantee that we're in the top 10. So, all right. I think the schedule, obviously hot off the press last night release. I think it's really interesting, and I really can't stand how much hype people put into the toughest schedule, who has the toughest road to the championship, when this is like a completely new season. And not every team, but the majority of the teams have, 30 or 40% new players on their entire roster. So it just doesn't make any sense to me. I hate when people put so much stake in something that really has nothing to do with the game of football. We were talking pre-show, like, bro, you really don't even know if you're going to be good until week 5 or 6. Like, you have no clue. You have no shot to know if you're going to be good until those games, until you're tested and you understand, your weaknesses and your strengths. And then, dude, injuries happen all the time. So I think that the strength of schedule is still irrelevant. Maybe after the season, if you look back and was like, oh, they had the toughest road. But preseason doesn't make much sense to me. What do you guys think?
Acho, we'll talk about how your schedule's even put together. I mean, I know you in your executive role in the NFLPA. I mean, talk about, like, how does this actually come to be, and the uniqueness between how the NFL does scheduling and Major League Baseball and the NBA?
Yeah, it's interesting. I never knew initially how the NFL got their schedule. I know this. So you got your different conferences, and within the different conferences, like the NFC and the AFC, there's four different divisions. And so obviously you're going to play each team in your division twice. So that's what, six of your games. And then you're going to play an entire other division from your conference for four games. And then you play a division from the other conference for, I believe, another four. And then the other way they do it is they pick teams who are, like, let's say, like, you're the fourth team in your four team conference, because each division has four teams. Let's say you're the last team, you play the other last ranked teams in different divisions. And so I think when it comes to strength of schedule, like, when you were a bad team the year before, you're going to play a few of your games that are on your schedule are going to be against the other worst teams from other divisions. And so if you actually make a quick change, say you were really bad and you get really good, you have a lot better chance of having success the year after, because the year after, if let's say you're the number one ranked team in your division, now you're playing the other number one ranked teams. And Trey, you could probably add some more clarity to that if you'd like, but that's kind of a little bit of how the schedule is made. So it's not necessarily random. It's usually, oh, well, because there was one year we played Philly like 3 years in a row. I'm like, what is going on? Well, they were the other third ranked team for 3 years. We were both third ranked in our respective divisions. And that's why we played them so often, even though we were playing all the teams with the Bears, all the teams at NFC North. And we played like the NFC South or whatever. You know what I mean? So that's how that was set up.
Yeah. I mean, so like what you said, it's predetermined. Like, everybody, you can go out, 5 to 8 years and know the opponents you're going to be playing. Obviously you don't know what week and that, but if you're going to be, for the most part, if you're going to be home or away. So like, let's take the last year I played in Indy, right? We're the AFC South. And so we have Texans, Titans, Jacksonville, home and away, right? So those are the six games Sam's talking about. But then also you're going to play the NFC North and the AFC North. So you're going to play those eight teams. Four of those games are going to be home. Four of those games are going to be away. And then you're lined up based on where you finished the year before with like the NFC West and the AFC East or something along those lines. So then you play, you know, one game or two games there, one home, one away. So yeah, that's just kind of how it's all set up. But bro, I'll say, like, being playing in Indy last year, you couldn't ask for, and you shoot when you were in Arizona, bro, you're guaranteed eight home games, and eight of those games are going to be in a dome, you know, so you have temperature climate controlled. And then you play the Texans as well, which is also in a dome, so there's another guaranteed, you know, nice weather game. And you play Jacksonville, which is usually it's hot, but it's better than playing in the negative degree weather, and then Nashville as well. So none of those cities are cold, you know, so you're guaranteed, what is that, 9, 10, 11 games are guaranteed to be in a perfect situation, weather-wise, which is a dream scenario.
And that is something that I used to look at. So people always say, okay, when a schedule comes out as a player, what are you circling? Is there any game that you circle or put a star by? I can't wait. And yes, if there's a team that you used to play on that you're going to play, you might put a circle or a star on that game. Or maybe it's the season opener and it's Monday night, it's Sunday night football or Thursday night football. You might put a circle or star around that game. But for me, I skipped past all of that. And I always went down to the very end of the season, because I was in Chicago for 4 years. And I said, okay, what games are we playing outdoors? Because I do not want to be in the negative degrees. So,
no question.
So those were always my time in Chicago. My time in Arizona was different because, once again, we were in a dome. And so it was going to be warm. It really was going to be hot. And then we were playing teams like Seattle, San Francisco. And so it wasn't going to be as cold. And we rarely ever played the NFC North. Or if we did, we played them in early in the season, so it was never cold. So for me, it was always about the weather. How cold is it going to be? How many layers am I going to have to put on in December? And man, hopefully it's warm come Christmas and come Thanksgiving, because I'm not trying to be cold out there.
Well, in every year that you guys played with the Bears, you finished with the Packers.
Yeah,
and it was either in Chicago or in Green Bay.
That's
what
sucks about that.
Yeah, 1 year. I mean, right after Christmas, it was freezing.
-26 with the wind chill. -26.
Bad Aaron, ball, bro.
So Trey, are there any games that you kind of put a star, you circle when the schedule comes out?
No, I was exactly like what you said. I mean, obviously, former teams you played on, cold weather games by far was the first thing I looked at as soon as it's released, like you said. But I'll also say, like, dang it, bro, I forgot what I was going to say again. Never mind. Forget about it. You guys cut that.
Sorry. When you get it, because I'm like, this is trivia.
It's about the season, and it has to do with something about the strength of schedule.
Strength
and I just
schedule.
Remembered it, and I forgot
it's
about
not
it.
As high, not as teams aren't as good.
No, I'll remember it. Sorry.
Okay.
Sorry. Apologize.
No, Nobi, you're good. You know what it is interesting about strength of schedule was the Steelers last year. Were they on the list for 2020's hardest schedule? I mean, they're the number one. You know, and there was a whole bunch of talk last year that they were going to go undefeated, a little bit because of the conference that they were in before they lost. But I always wondered, man, like, were they down like in the 20s for most difficult schedule or easiest schedule?
They were. I'm looking at it right now. Yeah, they have to be towards the bottom if I haven't passed them yet. They had the 31st toughest schedule, so the second easiest schedule.
So right now they have the first hardest, you know what I mean? So again, yeah. This is what separates, I think, the NFL from the NBA and Major League Baseball in so many ways, is because the NFL, it's so hard to repeat. I mean, because if you end up winning it all, then you got to play four of your games, the number one seed in each of the four other conferences. So or the four divisions that I think is makes the kind of uniqueness of the NFL schedule to try and level the playing field. And like you said, we don't know till week 6 or 7, like, yeah, who's really going to be great. And like last year, you know, Trey, you were talking about the Bills and the Rams. Those were the only two teams in the preseason that had the toughest that mm-hmm. made it to the playoffs, you know? And so
in the top 10, yeah,
in the top 10, you know? Yeah. So, but speaking about Jacksonville, that's a good transition, because anytime you can just say, speaking about Jacksonville, because we often don't do that, they did the unthinkable. And Acho, I'm curious, man. I'm not going to put Florida on spot to talk about Florida, but like, I'm curious.
Do you want to? We can.
Well, let's start with Acho and Sam, what's your take? Like, what do you think about why Urban Meyer thought it would be a good idea to bring in a 33-year-old Tim Tebow?
Well, I want to add a disclaimer. So we're recording this. This is coming out on Thursday. He hasn't been signed yet. So like, Tim Tebow hasn't been signed yet, but Tim Tebow's 33 years old. He hasn't played and been on an NFL roster since 2015. He hasn't played in a game in the NFL since 2012. And he's been playing baseball the last 5-7 years. And he got a workout with the Jacksonville Jaguars, his former coach, Urban Meyer, and they're expected to sign Tim Tebow. A lot of people are up in arms, and I think I honestly don't have too much of an issue with it. Trey's looking at me like, this dude right here, I don't have too much of an issue with it. But I honestly think the real reason why is that, like, I like Tim Tebow. You know, I think in my heart of hearts, I think if it was somebody who I didn't like as much, I would probably have a bigger issue with it. But as I sit here today, I'm like, bro, Tim Tebow's living his best life. He played football. They said he couldn't play quarterback. He went out there. He won a playoff game. He got kicked out. Not kicked out, but he's not in the NFL anymore because a lot of people say he wasn't a good quarterback, which a lot of people could probably agree he wasn't a good quarterback. Went to go play baseball for 5-6 years. And then he comes back and says, hey, Urban, his former coach in Florida, who he won 2 national championships with. Hey, I'd love to go back and play in the NFL. I'll even play tight end. I don't even need to play quarterback. Can I come work out? His homeboy, you know, probably Trey's homeboy too. I need some new homeboys. I think that's the biggest lesson. His homeboy says, hey, come on, do your workout. He does the workout, and the word on the street is he's going to be signed. So I don't have an issue with it because I think at the end of the day, because people are saying, well, he's taking up a roster spot and it's not fair and all these things. My thing is, if a 33-year-old who hasn't played tight end since his freshman or sophomore year in high school comes out and beats you out, then you probably weren't going to make the team in the first place. That's my opinion. But Trey is sitting there low-key, not arms crossed, but hands on his hips, trying to say something. So I would love to hear, Trey, what you got?
I am not. You imagine how sore he's going to be after his first practice? Like, that's my thing. Like, bro, I made the transition. I was college quarterback my first year. And then I remember, like, basically after training camp, my first year, Urban was like, hey, we need you to play offense, not just quarterback, you know, move around. Bro, I remember my first practice in college, you know, that, as a non-quarterback. And, bro, the contact and the physicality of, it really doesn't matter what position, it's like 10 times more than it is at the quarterback position, just because you never get hit. Like, I would remember, like, bro, in high school, even now in the NFL, like, they absolutely scream and lose their minds if you come close to the quarterback. Like, even come close to him, you don't even got to hit him. Like, just get close to him when he's throwing the ball, and they every coach loses their mind and they kick you out of practice or whatever. And, like, bro, like, I remember my first practice as a non-quarterback, and I was like, dude, do I really want to do this? Like, this hurts. Like, this is like every single day hitting contact. And granted, that's college and it's not going to be like that in the NFL, but you still have, you know, a padded practice on Wednesday, and you still got to go through training camp and all those things. So I mean, bro, I could only imagine. I remember how messed up I was, you know, during that 3 or 4 month period where I was transitioning and learning how to use my hands and how to block and how to hit and get hit, you know, like that when you're not expecting to get hit. But then you add age onto that. And I mean, I know me now, like, gosh, I get a lot more sore than I did when I was, you know, 21, 22, 23 years old. So, like, I could only imagine just physically how is he going to play, but, like, how is he going to feel after, you know, all those constant hits and, you know, trying to block a guy who's, you know, 3 times bigger than you and 2 times more athletic than you are, you know, like, how does that work? And learning all those things at an older age. I mean, obviously mentally it can be done, but physically is the part that, there's not many 33-year-old tight ends in the NFL to start out with, you know, just guys who have played that position their whole entire career, you know, not many of them. And so it'll be interesting to see, you know, how he does. Obviously hope he does great and does a really, really good job. But, and also we really don't even know what
role or capacity he's going to be signed in. You know, like, no one really knows if it's going to be strictly as a tight end or as like a coach or like a mentor or whatever the situation is, because the dude's not even signed yet. So who knows, you know, at the end of the day.
Well, in August, he turns 34. So just we'll add another year. Here's the thing I keep thinking about is Urban Meyer and has had a track record of like loyalty, like probably one of the most loyal to a fault. And obviously we saw this with Bruce Earl's like grandson when he brought him in, kept him in, and that guy was doing some terrible things to his wife at Ohio State. We saw him even try and hire the strength coach from Iowa when he took over the NFL job. Like, this guy is loyal, but I keep trying to figure out what's going through Urban's mind. Is it, oh, I just like Timmy's a son to me and we got to bring him in and he needs a shot. Is he trying to go like, this is the kind of culture I want, and Tim is going to be the guy at like a Rudy, like for the Jaguars, and is just going to work his tail off and practice and die for every loose ball. Which leads me to wonder, as a fan, when guys get signed, like, how does that affect the locker room? Do dudes in the locker room go, what's management thinking? You know, and how often does that translate over to the coach? Like, this is the coach's decision or this is the general manager's decision? How does that work? Does that make sense?
Yeah. I mean, I've been in situations where like, you're like, what are we doing? Especially at your own position, you know, like you're sitting there and all of a sudden you got a new guy in your room and you're like, what the heck's going on? Cause then obviously if they bring in a new guy, then that usually means somebody else is on their way out, you know? But I've been in situations where it's been like that. But I've also been in situations where like, you can kind of tell the head coach doesn't want the player on the team for multiple reasons. You know, a lot of times it's for like a distraction standpoint. But at the end of the day, a lot of NFL coaches don't make the final decision. A lot of times it's the general manager. And so like, you're sitting there and you're like, you could tell just by your position coaches, you know, attitude or the way he's acting, body language. And then also like the head coaches, sometimes like you can kind of tell who they fight and vouch for and then who they literally don't want. And they have the guy probably doesn't know they have no shot. The player like doesn't know they have no shot, but like, you can kind of tell like, man, he's not really investing his time into this guy. He wants to deal with the guys that are already on the team. So, I mean, it can go both ways, but then once again, like it really depends on how the leaders in the locker room, because at the end of the day, you're trying to win a game and multiple games in the championship. And so if that guy's going to help, then you got to, regardless if he's going to help or not, you got to embrace him with open arms, but it also helps if he's going to help the team, you know, win.
It's amazing because in one like decision, one like little leaked piece about Tebow doing this little workout, we're not talking about Trevor Lawrence. And pre that, we were talking Trevor. There's like videos of him taking a private jet, he and his new bride walking, landing. Everything was like the locks of his hair walking, you know, Jaguar jersey, him walking onto the field, shaking the owner's hand, all of that. We're not talking about that. We're talking about Tim Tebow, 34-year-old in August, Tim Tebow playing. So part of me, I'm like, is this a strategy? Take the pressure off Trevor, because Tebow has that effect and Tebow's not going to make the team. And then I'm like, oh, this is pretty genius. Let it just be peaceful for Trevor. Learn the system. Go play. Or is there some other loyalty issue? I don't know. Sam, what how do you make sense of all of this?
Well, I mean, even just to Trey's point, that thing about, and it's, I don't think it's this what case in Jacksonville, but there is a difference in loyalty between if you're there because of the coach or if you're there because of the general manager. I remember being back in Chicago and it was my first year there and we had signed a couple big free agents at outside linebacker, me not being one of them. we saw like three and I was like, hey guys, they're like, nah, it ain't you, it's somebody else. And I wasn't tripping because I still made the team and I was doing my thing. But like one of our big free agent signings, Pernell McPhee, like year one, he was kind of okay. But then year two, he was like, man, something's going on. I'm like, what do you mean? He's like, man, the coaches, they're not playing me the way that I think I should be used. And I'm like, what do you mean? It's the coach's decision. He's like, nah, you don't understand. Back when I was in Baltimore, like I played on the outside, I played on the inside. And that's what they told me I would do when I came here. And every time I go to tell the coach, I want to play more on the inside. And what I mean by that is he's an outside linebacker. But when you're like a bigger outside linebacker who can rush the quarterback from the inside, like as if you're a defensive tackle on third down, and you're quick and you're fast and you're strong, you create mismatches and you make huge plays. Think if there are any Packers fans listening, think what Za'Darius Smith does for Green Bay. He'll go on the inside or on the outside. He'd like have tons of sacks and make a ton of plays. And Purnell was like, they're not letting me do that. And I'm like, dude, like, if we wanted to win, of course they'll put you in the best positions to win. And then I realized, then he told me something. He was like, nah, what happened is I'm not the coach's guy. And I'm like, come on, man. There's no guys or not. He's like, no, I'm not the coach's guy. Come to find out a year or two later, the reason that Purnell was there was because of the GM, and the GM actually wanted somebody else. How did I know that? Because 3 years later, the head coach, the defensive coordinator, wanted somebody else. He didn't want Purnell, but he got Purnell. I found that out because 3 years later, we were a struggling team, and finally the head coach got the guy that he wanted, except for it was kind of 3 years after, and the guy was older and wasn't playing as well. And we talked to him. He was like, yeah, they tried to sign me three years ago, but I took a better offer somewhere else. And so it made sense. It's like, oh, wow, like Purnell's right. The coach didn't want him, but the coach had to use what he had. And many players don't catch on to that, but Fee, we call him Fee because his last name is McPhee. Fee caught on to that. And a lot of people don't believe that because it sounds almost ridiculous or ludicrous. Like, you think a coach would want to win, and it took me a while to believe that, but I started to believe that. This scenario is different because Urban Meyer has, in a lot of ways, people put it like he's been given the keys. Like, he can do whatever he wants. He can hire who he wants, fire who he wants. That was part of his agreement in coming to Jacksonville. I need full control of the roster, of my staff. That's why he's fired already a couple Jacksonville coaches. He's brought in coaches who he's coached with back at Ohio State. He's brought in coaches he's coached with back in Florida, yeah. Even back at Utah. So that's like, if you look at the roster, many of the coaches who are on that roster have some kind of tie to Urban, even players. He drafted Luke Farrell in the fifth round, a tight end, I believe, who played under him at Ohio State. Yeah. He signed as a free agent Carlos Hyde, who was a running back for him at Ohio State. And now he's working out and trying to bring in Tim Tebow. So for me, there's this idea of familiarity. I want to be with people who I know, people who I trust, people who can help me build whatever culture I'm trying to build. But the issue with that comes when it's almost like that deal of like power corrupts, but absolute power corrupts absolutely. And not even that, just this deal of like no checks and balances. So when he hired that Iowa strength coach, who I mean it was just a bad hire for many reasons, he wasn't thinking of like the evil that this guy had done as a strength coach. He wasn't thinking of all the complaints of the Iowa players saying, hey, like, this guy, I don't know if like this guy is racist, I don't know if this guy just hates us, but this guy is not a good coach. This guy got kicked off of Iowa. And Urban's like, hey, come on, because I know him. I've known him for 20 years. And then Urban went on and fired the coach because of pressure. He had to. But it's like, I think sometimes you only see what's in front of you. You don't see what's around you, and that can hurt you.
Well, let me protect my guy here really quick. It's not just Urban that does this. It's almost every coach in the league. You know, you see when a guy like, shoot, let's talk about Indy, Nick Sirianni, offensive coordinator, left to go be the head coach in Philly. Went with him, went the assistant defensive coordinator, who is now the coordinator, you know what I mean? And also went, you know, tight end coach Jason Michael. I mean, bro, like, there's so many different guys, and this happens everywhere, you know, so it's not just one. Urban just happened to make some bad choices, you know, along the way, but it does literally happen everywhere you go.
But it's so true. Trey is 100% right. It happens everywhere. People hire who they're friends with. But what's even more interesting, what I saw during my time in the NFL and locker rooms, is that usually when people ask, okay, like, do teams tank on purpose? Do they try to lose to get a better draft pick, especially when you know you're not going to be in the playoffs? And I still couldn't tell you if GMs are telling coaches, let's lose this. I couldn't tell you that. Yeah, sometimes I do wonder. But what I have noticed is that, because people say, okay, players quit on the team and all these things. Yeah, I don't necessarily believe that all the way. But what I have noticed is when teams start to get towards losing records and playoffs are out of the picture, and you kind of have a feeling you may not be there anymore, when coaches have that feeling, they start buddying with other coaches who either they know are going to leave to get another job or who they just want to stay close with in the future so that whenever one of the coaches leaves, they can take the other guy with them.
Yeah.
And I've seen that. I'm like, wait, what is going on? Like, we're supposed to be trying to game plan for a team in week 17. And y'all are over here talking about, you know, trying to get set up your jobs for the future. I remember, dude, Arizona Cardinal went to the playoffs 2014, and I'd just come off of an injury, and but I played well in the playoff game. We lost, but I had a sack and, you know, did well. And I'm on the flight back. And mind you, we're about to have exit interviews. You know, you meet with your coaches, you leave, all the things. And I'm on the flight back, and I'm just, like, distraught because we should have won. We were playing the Panthers, and, like, how did we lose? I'm sitting there. And one of the coaches on our 2.5-hour flight back to Arizona, or 3-hour flight back, he comes up next to me, and I'm thinking he's going to go over some film and say, hey, man, great job, or hey, here's what we can do. I don't know what he's going to – just to console me about the loss. And he comes in. He's like, how you feel? I'm like, man, you know, how do you expect? You know, I'm sad we lost. He's like, no, I feel that. I understand. But, hey, man, you played a hell of a game. Really proud of you. But, hey, tomorrow in the exit interviews, I know you're going to meet with the head coach. You mind putting in a good word for me? And I'm like, bro, we just lost the game. Like, what are we talking about?
Literally like three hours ago,
the game, we just lost. Like, my first playoff game that I got a chance to play in because I was injured. The first one I've been in the NFL. You're talking about a good word. And, like, he was even saying the same stuff weeks before when I'm like, I'd gotten benched like a couple weeks before. And I'm like, what is going on? Like, and I was like, you know what? How can I be better as a player? So I went up to dude's office, to coach's office. Coach, what can I do to be a better player? And he starts talking about, you know, leg strength and random stuff that I didn't think made a lot of sense. Cause I'm like, no one's ever talked about my leg strength, but whatever. And then he's like, hey man, like, I know our season's kind of, you know, coming toward close to an end, but I know you're close with management. I know you're really tight with some of the ownership. I know you're close with the head coach. You might put in a good word for me because I want to get promoted. And I was like, but how can I? It was just like, how can I be? I didn't come here for that. And so anyways, there is this. So Trey is right. It's not only Urban. It's probably 99%. Of NFL coaches. I don't know how the NBA or the MLB or maybe even business world, it may be a little bit similar, but in the NFL, it's all about who you know, and that's how people get hired and fired.
Yeah. Steve, switching gears really quick. Medina Spirit, is that how you say it? Medina,
yeah.
Spirit?
Medina, I think, yeah.
Kentucky Derby.
Yeah.
Test positive. Speaking of anti-inflammatories, your boy Tim's going to have to be on those things whenever he starts playing ball. Woo, Lord, he's going to be so sore. Tested positive for banned substance. I think double the limit of what you're allowed to have for a horse. Didn't know much about this. I mean, obviously makes sense. They should have checks and balances and drug tests for them, I guess. But what are your thoughts? What's your take on that, bro?
I mean, every time you hear that an athlete – has tested positive for something and they're like, I didn't know, you know, like, you're always like, dude, you knew, like, you were trying to get a leg up. This is the first time an athlete literally had no idea. Like, this athlete had no idea. This poor horse, I mean, he was jacked and juiced, and I mean, and then it just brings so many questions. I've yet to find out the amount of money that was made that day, for people who bet on this horse to win. Do they have to pay that money back? I just have all of these questions. One, in the sense of, hey, this wasn't obviously right in any way, shape, or form to have to do this to a horse. It's terrible, but it leads me to ask so many questions. Like, dude, I keep thinking, like, why would this guy do this? Like, the power and the money and the prestige and the hope of, like, being a Triple Crown winner. Like, it's just crazy. So I'm like, I was so shocked when they said it was like almost two times the amount. I mean, you and I were like hitting each other up on text about it. Like, this is crazy. Like, to just, and this guy's like adamant, like, you know, we didn't do this. We'll have our day in court. And you're like, what? Yeah. So I don't know. What did it make you think when you, because we were going back and forth on text about it.
Well, I'm just tired of people like saying like, oh, I didn't know. I had no clue. It wasn't me. It was the guy taking the urine sample. He had, you know, the anti-inflammatory drug on his hand or his glove or whatever, bro. Like, I'm just so tired of that. But it makes me think, like, I mean, I would imagine, just hypothetically thinking, like, that's probably not his first time doing something like that. And he's had a lot of horses win in the past. And so, like, obviously it's impossible to go back and see, you know, how those or what happened with the drug sampling and all that type of stuff. But he did come out, I think, yesterday and admit that it was they did do it. And there was a product that the vet recommended them to use on the horse for fungus. But inside of that product, it so happenly had to have the anti-inflammatory drug in it. So now it's not everybody else's fault. Now it's, you know, his fault or the vet's fault, I guess he's getting to. I have so many questions. Like you said, like, bro, what happens? Does he have? So when you win that money, do you have to pay it back? Right. Obviously, the second place horse is now the champ, the winner of the Kentucky Derby. So do they get the money? But then all the bettors and all the money that's switching hands, you know, throughout the whole entire thing. Like, bro, like, what in the world? Like, you want to talk about a dumpster fire? And if you win, say you bet on the horse and the horse wins, are you going to give the money back? Or what are you going to do with it? Because I can tell you already, I've already spent it, you know, most likely, if that's the case. Good luck. You can have whatever, you know, whatever I won with it. You can have that if you want it. But if not, I got it.
Yeah, I mean, it's like Reggie Bush, you know. I mean, he was like one of my favorite players to watch. You know, does the guy who came second in the Heisman go like, oh, I now won the Heisman? No. Yeah.
Well, you know I think that's different though, because he didn't necessarily, I mean, I guess he cheated, but like not on the field cheated.
True. That's true.
Not performance cheated. You know what I'm saying? It's like my thing with all those is like, bro, like what good does it do to take the Heisman away from Reggie Bush? He already won. Like we already know he won forever. He is a Heisman Trophy winner, no matter if he has to give every trophy back or not. Like it doesn't, because it's not a performance thing. You know, if it's like a Lance Armstrong type thing where it's a performance and he was, you know, cheating to beat people, I think it's a little different. Same with the horse. Like, I think it's different that he was cheating, physically cheating and making himself better. But I think me personally, I mean, and I could be wrong. I'm not saying I'm right. I think that's different than a Reggie Bush where, you know, off the field stuff was going on.
Yeah, no, that's totally, I think you're totally right with that. That makes sense. And I, you know, what's funny for me is I think I just became super cynical after Lance Armstrong. I was a Lance guy. Like, I believed it. Like, I'm like, Greg LeMond, calm down. Like, why are you going after Lance? Like, this guy got through cancer. Like, you know, and I remember just feeling so duped in that whole story. And I mean, now to this day, I'm like, oh, yeah, of course everybody's doping. Of course everyone will cheat because of power, prestige, and money. Everyone will, you know, I hate that I've gotten that way, but I think in some ways it was because I was so bought into Lance is a good guy. Like, you know, he's in dodgeball and like, he's like, what are you going to do, man? Like to Vince Vaughn, like I faced cancer and I still went back at it, you know, like just there was something about that story that was so compelling. But I think this is a mess, and for horse racing, an absolute dumpster fire. So, Sam, have you been following this at all? Like, are you someone who, like, with big hats, shows up to Churchill Downs and, you know, puts a little couple bucks on some ponies?
Well, no, I've never been to the Kentucky Derby before, but I mean, even this, obviously, keeping up with the story has been interesting, because I'm like, as soon as there's a report, it's probably true. Probably true. Yeah. And then you start seeing the denials of, well, I didn't know. And it's like, dude, it was 2 times the limit. You know what I mean? How do you mean you didn't know? And then it was like, well, it was the vet that did it. I'll say 2 things. One is a comment. One's a question for you, Steve. The comment first is, like, in the NFL, there's a zero tolerance policy when it comes to performance enhancing drugs. Whether it was an accident or whatever, you are responsible for what you put in your body. And I think it should be similar for horses, the same. It's like, hey, the people who train the horses, you're responsible for that horse. I don't care if it was an accident. I don't care if you, period. Because otherwise, everyone else is at a disadvantage because you took something to help you perform better. Reggie Bush, totally different. Reggie Bush is couldn't be more different in my mind, because number one, not even because many other people were taking money too. And not only because, number one, not only because you know how hard it is as a college student when you don't have anything and a team and somebody's like, hey man, we'll give you a little bit, you know, to come play. Like it did, you know, number two, but it didn't affect his on-field performance. Somebody paying for a meal, paying for a dinner, buying his mom a house, whatever. It didn't make him play better as a football player. So I think those are two different things. That's kind of my first observation. So yes, it was obvious because of those rumors. But Steve, you talked about that power and that prestige and that money piece. You know, Sam Ponder, you know, she used to always say, follow the money. That was always kind of her thing. Does that always have to be true? Because you said, man, it seems like everybody's going to cheat because of the money or the power or the prestige. And I still don't believe that. And Trey, I'd love to hear your opinion as well. Because even in the NFL, it's like, yeah, people are trying to take performance enhancing drugs and trying to get away with it. Or sometimes I'm like, shoot, if you could take a performance enhancing drug and only get a 4-game suspension or a 6-game, and then they find out the next year and you have a dominant year, you get this big contract. Why wouldn't everybody do it? Why wouldn't everybody do it? But I'd love to hear from you, Steve. Like, what do you think? Is that have to be true?
I don't think it has to be true. I mean, but I do think that, you know, I mean, let's go. There are certain conferences and there are certain college football teams. And this is, I mean, we know this, like, and that they feed their players Adderall. They give their players Adderall. Well, Adderall is a banned substance in the NFL, but they're giving Adderall and they can do it because it's focused in the classroom, but it makes you wildly more focused on the field. But then some of these guys end up going to the NFL combine and they start working out. They still got Adderall in their system. And we think it's performance enhancing, but it's just because in the college system, they've been handed Adderall. And they've like gotten addicted to it. I mean, there is like, I still can't believe that this hasn't been a bigger story because there are a lot of programs that do this. But I do think people will cheat to get ahead and they'll cheat to get ahead. And I think some of it is to provide for their family. Some of it's because, man, I'm tired of being the ninth best receiver. I want to get a bigger paycheck. I want to be seen as the guy. Or like I think in baseball, some of the performance enhancing was you have 162 game series. And I don't think all of it was for power and crushing home runs. A lot of it was for quicker healing. So I think, no, it doesn't have to be that way. But I do think that it's when power is right before you, it's easier to cut corners. When incredibly massive amount of contracts are in front of you, it's easy to cut corners. And there's people there that want you to cut corners. And there's people telling you in your ear, we can make it away so that you don't get caught. I mean, the ways in which some of these athletes have done it to not get caught, I mean, it's mind-blowing. I mean, you go back and study the whole Balco thing. I mean, people were like going to different places, drop-offs. I mean, it's wild. So I think you can resist that temptation, but like, you know, you look at some of the baseball players and they're like, I knew I was as good as that player, but that other player's using. And now I'm the 15th best? Nah, if it's a level playing field, I'm number two or three. But now I'm number 15 and my contract is coming up and I'm going to get less money because I'm not one of the top three. So what am I supposed to do? Well, I think this was Wally Joyner's story with the Angels in the MLB. So like just in these stories where really, really good guys ended up being tempted because it wasn't a level playing field. And so their integrity was put to the test and some people pass and some people don't.
Yeah. Cause my question is just to that point, Steve, and I'll ask you, Trey, what do you do when everyone else is doing it? Like everyone else is taking performance enhancing drugs. Look at track and field. Like you can't even expect somebody to anytime in American and maybe other countries are doing it too, but I'm living in America. So I'm watching our track people. Every time an American wins, which is 100 or something, it's like, oh, a couple months later, performance enhancing drugs is disqualified. You know, so I'm like, But what if it's like, dude, well, all of them are doing it too. They just didn't get caught. What do you do then? Do you stand by the wayside and be fifth, sixth, ninth? Or do you say, you know what? It's easy. People want me to do it. I'm doing it for my country. Like, Trey, what do you do? What do you do? Because you're, I feel like you're very practical and very like A plus B equals C. But like, what do you think about this?
Yeah, I mean, I mean, at the end of the day, I think cheating is cheating. You know, there's no other way around it. I think you got to think if it depends on how far you want to go. Like, it depends on how good you are already naturally. And it depends on how important it is for you. Like, so like for me, and also a lot of this, like for some people, it's a lot of it's genetics, you know, like a lot of people are already naturally gifted to a point where like, they wouldn't even think about it because they're good enough without it, you know? But then a lot, some people like me, like I'm a lot smaller than everybody else at my position, you know? So like for me, it would kind of make sense in a way to do something like that, just so I could be at the top level of my game. But then again, like thinking not everybody wants to be the best, you know, there, and I know it's hard to really hear that, you know, and hard to really say that, but there are some people that are like, oh, I got to be the best. If I'm not the best, I'm a failure, you know? And then there's some people like, oh dude, if I can provide for my family and do this, something that I'm good at, you know, it comes natural to me, then this is what I'm going to do. And so like, I think for each individual person, you have to like look on the inside and like, how much does it really mean to you? Cause like, once you do it and you get caught, like you're a cheater, you know, yeah, at the end of the day. And so, I mean, if you're asking me, would I ever consider it? No, because I don't care about it that much to risk being a cheater or someone who gets caught, you know, doing that type of stuff. And so it doesn't make any sense to me, but some people it's their life. Like it literally, like that's all they care about is being number one at their position, at their sport, at whatever. And that's, for me, it's not my dream is to be the best guy.
I just remember being in the locker room with you in the training room. We'd be in the training room, you know, practice meetings might be at 8 or 7:40. We'd be in there at like 7:15. You know, we obviously did our Bible study beforehand, but even before then, you'd be there getting your rehab and be on your phone looking through news. And if anything like this ever came up, without even a second thought or a second glance, you say, oh, cheater. He cheated. Doesn't matter. Madonna Spirit, cheater. Disqualified. Lance Arch, cheater. Period. Like, once that's on your record, it's on your record. Like, for you, it's like so black and white, which I think makes a lot of sense. It's like, dude, you can't cheat. At least in sports, performance enhancing drugs, you can't cheat and then outperform everybody and win and still think you're a winner. At that point, you become a cheater. That's at least what I heard from you. But also, I'm like, you're right. There's no, if you know what I mean? I guess I lose a lot of respect for guys who get caught taking performance enhancing drugs. And I'm like, dude, like all those sacks you got, like what, Brian Cushing, like he was, all the stuff you were doing that was so amazing. Oh, it was because you were cheating.
And they'll never really remember his sacks. You're going to remember him testing positive for steroids. And so like for him, it might've been worth it though. You know, during those times, he was one of the baddest guys, you know, in the league, and like, boom, he was doing all these crazy things. And everybody's like, wow, how can he do that? Which is cool. You know, for him, like, great. That's what he might've wanted. And I hope that's, you know, what he wanted and he got what he wanted out of it. But like, for me, it's just not worth it. You know, I have kids that are going to look back and they're going to have to deal with that. You know, last thing I will want is my kids to be in high school and people start questioning them. Like, is he 100% natural? Cause his dad wasn't, you know, or, you know, just things like that. Like, I think it's generational. When you talk about, you know, those types of things, and it's more important than just yourself, in my opinion. And I could be, everybody has their own opinion in that. It's more important than just me and what I can do. It's more for like, how can I build a foundation? And you'll be someone who changes generational stuff in the family, to make it for good instead of, you know, being the best. Or, cause like I said, a lot of it is genetically, you're different than everybody. Like, so you look at a guy like George Kittle, you know, or Jason Kelce, like, bro, genetically, these guys are just different than they're made different. Like, to be the best at your position, God has to give you, you know, certain gifts that he doesn't give 99.9% of the rest of the world, you know? So, and it takes a lot to really sit back and realize that, like, I'll never be the best tight end. And I understand that now. I didn't know that, you know, when I was in college, you know, I wanted to be, and there's a good part of that, you know, wanting to be the best and, you know, training to be the best. But at the end of the day, like, you look around and you see the other guys who you're going against, I'm like, goodness, like, these guys are so much more athletic and bigger and stronger than I am. And I'm not going to cheat to catch up with them. I'm just going to stay in my lane and do what I can do to, you know, provide for the fam.
Trey, you said something really, I feel like really, really just special. And it still blows my mind since you're a Florida guy. But you were talking about like rewards. You know what I mean? Like, I hope Cushing got what he wanted. Right. And like yeah. when Jesus is talking like Matthew 5, 6, and 7, Sermon on the Mount, you'll hear him often say, truly, I say to you, they have received their reward. Like they did this to pray in front of people, and like they're praying and they got the reward in that moment to be seen as holy, but they didn't get the eternal reward. You know, that reward is so small in comparison to, you know, the conversations that will come if, you know, whoever's cheated with their kids, right? Yeah. Do you cheat like your dad did? You know, like it's like, and that reward is so small in comparison to the legacy or in comparison to eternity. So I think there's something that you can have such a black and white because you're like, no, it's not worth it. It's not worth like another 7-figure deal if it's going to cause X, Y, or Z. It's not worth it. It's just not.
You know, the heartbreak all of us would have if, you know, 7, 8, 10 years down the road, like our kids are playing sports and someone asks them, are you cheating like your dad was? Like, bro, you know how sick I would be for my child, like, and having to deal with something that he wasn't even alive, you know, during those times, but like has to deal with that because of the decisions that I made. It just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. Hey, one thing, Sam, I thought you were going to bring up. I mean, you went to track and field, and you went to just how often there is doping. And then you started going like, if you're finishing ninth, you know, I thought you were going to drop DK Metcalf. He's probably the only clean one in that race. You know what I mean? Dude, what a
stud. Hey, he was moving, bro. Holy crap.
6'3", just you can
just tell. I was setting up the transition because DK was, so DK 6'3", 230 something, finished, he ran, and it pretty much was an Olympic qualifying, if I'm not mistaken, meet with Olympic sprinters, like somebody who he beat was in the top 100 in the world ever, not ever, but at least currently. And so, 6'3", 228, at least at the combine. He's probably 235 or so now. And ran a 10.37?
Yeah. Which was moving, bro.
And he probably only been training for like 2 months. That's a crazy thing. And so like I think the point I want to make is this. I love to hear people's opinions, even if you're home listening. What are your thoughts? And like share them on our social media and like let us know what you all like, you know, these topics and not. But what I do want to know is this, because Michael Johnson, right? Everyone knows Michael Johnson, Olympian, like one of the most decorated track athletes in all of, you know, U.S. track, maybe in the world, really. He put out a tweet saying, because everyone was talking about DK Metcalf, like everyone was talking about Tim Tebow. And he put out some kind of tweet saying, well, I'm going to, out of respect for the people who made the finals, I'm not going to talk about the football player who went to go and perform, right? The football player. I'm like, okay, bro, first of all, you have a whole football training facility called Michael Johnson Performance in Dallas where you train guys for the combine. So that's one. On the other side, I get what you're saying, because there are guys who train their entire lives for this and they're not getting any of the attention. But at the same time, point number three is that DK wasn't doing it for the attention. No one knew that DK Metcalf was running in this race until like a few days before when they put out the list of people in the race. He just wanted to get better. He wanted to get faster. And my brother was out there at the meet. It was in LA. And he asked him after he ran, he said, DK, why did you do this? What was what made you want to run? And his response was that I did it because everyone else was scared. He wanted to show up. He wanted to do it for himself. He didn't care about the you know, he wasn't after the reward of like, oh wow, DK. His reward is, this is gonna make me faster, better, stronger as a football player. It's gonna help my team win Super Bowls. It's gonna, you know what I mean? So like, I think that mentality is what makes the difference. But I'm really interested, even obviously from you guys, but even people listening, like, what do y'all think about DK Metcalf, this NFL superstar, training and running in an Olympic trial race? That's what I want to know. But Trey, what are your thoughts?
I love it, man. I mean, I'm happy for him. Happy he performed well. I wasn't expecting a 10-3. I can tell you that right now. Boy was moving. I think people don't realize the size differential. And like you said, for probably 2 months, maybe a month and a half, maybe 3 months, but no more, definitely no more than that. He's been training for it, but dude, it takes so much time. I mean, I ran track. I was not fast in high school. I had a guy who was really fast, and that's why I ran track in the 4x1, because I could just hand him the baton and he would run really, really fast. He ended up having the third fastest 40 in the history of the 40. So like dumb fast, like really, really fast. So that's the only reason why I ran track. And I say that because size differential, I mean, ideally, the majority of the guys, and I mean, obviously, Usain Bolt is different than the majority of the guys, but majority of the guys are same height, you know, height and weight for the most part, you know.
How big was the guy you ran with in high school and who said the top 340? Like, how big, like, how small is he? Like, was it like
kind of like my frame? Kind of like, you know, just, yeah, you know.
He looked exactly like Steve, actually. For sure.
But I'm saying, like, and everything. DK Metcalf is 6'3", 235, 240. Was this guy, like, you think he was, like 180? I mean, because a lot of the track athletes, they're not 240. Even Usain Bolt is tall, but he's not, they're not pulling 240, 230.
So his name was Dre Archer. He played running back for the Steelers. I think he was picked in the fourth round. He was his, you know, what is this? Wikipedia is 5'8", 174. Man. Now that was in the NFL, not in high school. So 155, you know, 150, 145, somewhere in that range. But boy can move. Now he ran like a 4.26 or something like that, 40 time. And so like this is a size differential. To me was impressive. I think anything, really anything under like a 10.5, 10.4 and a half would be impressive. But then the fact that he almost won. And I mean, to your boy, Michael Johnson.
Yeah.
Like, bro, like no one would have watched that if it wasn't for DK. You know what I'm saying? Like, so, and like you said, it would be one thing if he was going in there like months in advance, like, oh, I'm going to run in this track meet, you know, because I'm whatever. But like, bro, he was humble about it. Like he was doing that, like you said, because he wanted to get better. So like that's a completely different story and a completely different. It should have been a completely different comment, in my opinion, from him than what he actually said to him.
That's okay. So if this is another thing I'd love to know from the home team fans, if you could actually have four NFL players right now line up for a 100 meter race, who do you want to see? I mean, I kind of want to see this. This brought up so much in me. Like, I'm like, man, wouldn't it be awesome if you could see John Ross, or you could see the Cheetah, you could see, you know, just DK Metcalf. I mean, even if it was for like, you know, home team podcast and some charity IJM. I mean, we should just start it right now. Let's see if these guys would do it. But like, be amazing. Like, just because I think a lot of the NFL guys were like, dude, surprised because DK didn't talk about it, and we're like, man, that's awesome. I want to see.
Dude, the courage that it takes. And here's what I mean by that. And I'll end with this. And Trey, you know exactly what I'm talking about. And Steve, you may know too. Since high school, middle school, and going on to college in the NFL, after practice or off day, or you're there hanging out, everyone's like, man, I'm gonna race you. I'm the fastest on the team. I could beat that guy. I was in Austin a couple weeks ago, and there was two receivers who were both pretty fast. And like during the spring game, I was like, man, which one of y'all's faster? And they all kind of pointed at one guy, but it was like, but the other guy was like, man, I could beat him. Like, it's kind of the mentality. Everyone's always like, I could beat you, beat, you know, man, I could run, I could go beat these, I could go run track, I could do this, I could do that. And DK did it. DK did it. It's so easy for me to say, man, I could go, you know, I could guard one of these guys in the NBA. I'd love to play so-and-so one-on-one, you know, bravado. But to actually do it and to hold your own, kudos, DK, because that takes courage.
That'd be cool to see other athletes, like if he starts something new where like other athletes would go and try to compete, obviously not like in a negative way, but like in a positive way, like, oh, let me see if I can do this, you know? I think I mean, obviously DK is for sure on my team. I mean, there's no question about that. So you're talking about 4x1 is what you're talking about?
Yeah.
I mean, DK, Cheetah. I mean, the fastest player I ever played with from like a 100 meter standpoint was Jeff Demps. He ran in the Olympics. He was on the 4x1 team. He's not in the league anymore. But I know a guy that Sam and I both know that can roll is Deontay Thompson from Florida. DT can run DT. Now. Like DT can roll.
From Pahokee, right? He's from
Belglades.
Belglades. They got some athletes. I'll say this too, bro. There are certain parts of town, and maybe we got to talk about this now or on the next podcast, but there are certain parts of the country where you just got some athletes. And Belglades, like Pahokee, Florida, they got some athletes. There's one point where three or four of the guys on one NFL team were all from that Belglades area. Went to high school together, and they're all in the NFL, all from the same team. And then probably like 20 or so, maybe even more across the NFL currently. I was blown away.
And it's like this like country city, like right next to Lake Okeechobee. Like it's rough down there. Like they chase rabbits to make money, like crazy stuff, right? Like you hear all these stories about them. But those are the guys, like to your point, Sam, that like, if I went to one, it doesn't matter who it is from Belglades, and I say, I'm faster than you, line up. Let's line up right now. Like, no matter where you are. Bro, I've seen dudes race mid-season. And I'm like, bro, like, you know what can happen, bro, if you get injured racing on the practice field after practice. Like, it doesn't make any sense. You know, it's just crazy. But that's just how some people live that way. They want to be – I mean, I remember growing up, and, bro, we would have 6-7 people line up, and you'd race. And then the top two guys race again, you know. And, dude, it's just crazy the way – people take running and being faster than other people.
You know, this is a little change of topic, but like there is a mindset and a bravado, you know. And you know, when you think about like switching to the NBA, though, like Russell Westbrook has that. Yeah. Like Westbrook, I mean, like line up, let's go. You know, like I just, and what he accomplished even this week, I mean, breaking the triple double record, you know. This guy is just there's just something about him. People either love him or hate him, but you can't deny what this guy has done. And if you're not following the NBA, the legend Oscar Robertson had the triple double record, and Russ just kind of snuck up and took it from him and broke it. And he has just been balling out in a situation in Washington that probably people didn't think it was going to go very well, but he just continually just ceases to amaze. And so I'm just curious for you guys to kind of close out the podcast episode today. Like what are your thoughts on Russ? Cause for me, if I had to tell you like a biblical character and compare Russ to, it would be John the Baptist. Like, I feel like he is outside just doing his own thing. And he is just always taking it to the rack as hard as possible, like almost like AI, but just like he's not trying to make a layup. I want to dunk on your face. Like, and sometimes it's not taking the best shots, but like his ability to rebound, pass, like, but just the intensity and motor that he has. I love the guy. What do you guys think about Russ and what he accomplished?
I mean, the fact that he's doing it in 72 games. Instead of 82 games is obviously ridiculously impressive. One of the better athletes. And it's weird, man. Like, I hate it how this day and age, it's you either love the guy or hate the guy. Like, why can't you just respect, you know, what he's doing, dude? Like, and back in the day, I remember when I was in high school, maybe even before that, a double double was a massive deal. If you were getting a double double, bro, like you're a bad boy, you know, on the court, like you're getting paid. You're one of the highest paid players. And now all of a sudden, like they don't even show double doubles no more. You know, they don't even show triple doubles. It seems like they don't even care about what he's been able to do. And I don't watch much TV. I mean, if I do, it's going to be SportsCenter or a game. But like, I just feel it's gone so underappreciated, what he's been able to do. But then again, in this day and age, there's been so many records. I mean, look at what Steph has been able to do and how he's changed the game. I mean, look at what LeBron's done and how he's changed the game. So it's just a different time. And he gets the short end of the stick, you know, from that standpoint. But bro, like he is as impressive as it gets. And like you said, the ferocity that he attacks the hoop with and the way he's able to do what he does is just really impressive.
Yeah. And the coolest thing for me, obviously, no one ever thought that record would ever be broken. And so I'm thinking, if I'm one of his teammates, I could say, like, 10 years from now, man, I played with Russell Westbrook. I played with a dude that broke the triple-double record. How was it playing? You know, kids, how was it playing with them? And I would tell my little stories. But the thing for me that stood out was the rebound that helped him seal the record. I don't know if you guys saw it, but his teammate was right there to get the rebound. It was a big guy, center, power forward, and he got out of the way. He got out of the way and let Russell Westbrook get this rebound and set this record. That, for me, speaks volumes, because it shows that, yes, it's an individual award, but it's a team effort. It's not just him getting every rebound. It's his teammates knowing in the back of their head, hey, let's help our guy win this award. And so them boxing their guys out, or them being there to get a rebound, there's two guys and you get out the way so Russ can get his.
Yeah.
Even because now, even though when Russ wins, you win. For the rest of their lives, anyone who plays for the Wizards can say, I played with that dude and I helped him. I helped him get the record. Dad, how did you? Man, I could have gotten me 3 or 4 rebounds, but I gave it to Russ if it wasn't for me. So I think there's this idea of, like, when you give and when you, like, serve and when you not think of yourself so much, dude, so many people can gain and can grow. And yes, you could talk about Russell being quote unquote selfish, which doesn't make a lot of sense, because you got to assist the ball to, you know, to get a triple double. It's rebounds, points, assists.
At least 10 times, right?
Exactly. Yes. But people could have their opinions, but his teammates, I don't care about that. This dude set a record that many people thought would never, ever, ever be broken.
He's got 2 or 3 more games, right?
He does. To
do it. I still think, when I think about Russell, it's still so hard for me to think about KD, James Harden, Russell, all on the same team, and they didn't win a championship. Like, bro, you remember that? Too long ago, was it?
I think this is a bold statement. This is a hot take, but I think that's going to be Brooklyn this year. Really? Superstars, and because of a lack of leadership.
Yeah. Well, they've only played 7 games together, though, bro. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, there's multiple other reasons as well, but dude, these guys played years, 2, 3, 4 years together, bro, and they didn't win a championship, and they were so much fun to watch, and they didn't win. I don't know. For me, every time I hear Russell, I think of that.
That OKC squad and, like, that energy in that arena. I mean, you had Perkins. I mean, you had just some you had some dudes, you know. And I mean, that was a squad. And it's crazy because I don't think anybody thought Harden was going to be as good as he was when he left, and then his whole game elevated. So it's I mean, that. You always just wonder, one more year with those three, what could have happened? What could have happened?
Will we have the play-in tournament before we record our next podcast?
Well, so the play-in tournament, I think the first game is May 18th or so. So I think the play-in tournament in the NBA, I think we might we'll probably be right at the end of the play-in tournament.
Okay. It's gonna be interesting.
Okay. Yeah.
There is a new little hype though about it. I was watching the Sports Center and they were talking about, like, you know, one chance or, you know, win or go home. And I was like, oh, this is interesting.
NBA, so this is something to watch out for. So new rule for people who are listening or watching NBA. There's a new play-in tournament. So teams, you know, the top 8 teams make it to the playoffs, but now 1 through 6 are guaranteed a spot. 7, 8, 9, and 10 have to play in for their spot. So the number 7 team, which in the Western Conference right now is Golden State and LA, the Lakers, they would have 7 and 8 would play each other, and whoever wins gets a 7 seed. And then 9 and 10 play each other, and whoever
Grizzlies
wins,
and the Spurs right now in the Western
Grizzlies
Conference.
And the Spurs right now in the Western. Whoever wins goes and plays the loser from the 7 and 8 game, which could be the Lakers, could be the Warriors. And then for a play-in game to get in the last spot in the playoffs. So something to watch out for as you're at home watching. Our next episode probably will be right at the end of that play-in tournament, so we'll cover that next time. But a new little wrinkle in the NBA.
And I think all 10 spots are solidified right now. They don't know, like, the last 2 or 3 places, but I think all of the 10 teams are guaranteed. You know, you have Washington and the Pacers are the last 2 seeds in the East, and then you have the Spurs and the Grizzlies are the last 2 seeds in the West. So we'll see, dude.
It's going to be fascinating. Is LeBron going, man, I don't want to do the Nets and I'm just going to sit out? Or is he going to come out and just be like, don't sleep on us. This is still our league. This is still my league. This is still it's going to be fascinating to see what really happens.
Well, what's interesting with that is that so you say the top eight teams make it, right? So if you're the seventh seed, you're going to play the Suns. And then if you're the eighth seed, you're going to play the Jazz. I mean, they're both good teams, but I don't think LeBron's looking at them like, oh, no, I hope we don't play either one of them. You know, it's not like I would think he wouldn't want to play the Clippers before he wouldn't want to play, you know, either one of those two teams. So it's not the worst case scenario, you know, for them to be at the bottom. But you see, he hasn't played yet. He hasn't played in the last, you know, seven or eight games. I doubt he plays the rest of the season. He might just strap it back on for the play-in game, but we'll see.
Well, hey, thanks so much for tuning in. We'd love to hear you. As Sam was saying, hey, tweet us, find us on Instagram. Let us know who is your NFL 4x100. You going old school? You're going to put Deion Sanders primetime in there. Somebody else, maybe a high school friend that you think should have run with DK Metcalf. Throw them out there. Tag them. We want to know. Sam, you had another topic that you wanted to let people speak on. Do you remember that off the top of your head? I don't either. I don't. It was a good one. Well, maybe
I would love to hear, like I said, like, let us know what y'all want to talk about. So like, if y'all got some topics, hit us up on social at Home Team Podcast, Trey Burton, Steve Carter, Sam Macho. Let us know. Cause y'all might have some stuff that you're like, man, I wonder what it was like. Just like that NFL schedule story. People have been saying, man, I wonder what that's like, or even like the whole, like, you know, doping thing and, you know, and favoritism in sports. That's stuff we love talking about, and we love hearing what you all love hearing about as well.
Awesome. Well, hey, have a great rest of the day and week, and we will be back next Thursday. Grace and peace.